one of a generation of Chinese composers who had a very peculiar experience during their early years, during their youth, because their youth was during the Cultural Revolution. Now, 2 years after the Cultural Revolution had ended, in 1978, the Central Conservatory of Music in Beijing reopened its doors, and out of a staggering number of 17,000 applicants, they admitted 100 students. 17,000, they admitted 100. And out of these 100, about a handful were composers. And one of them was Qu Xiaosong. Now, these few composers admitted to the Central Conservatory in 1978, within a very short time, within the span of about half a decade, their music, a very striking synthesis of ancient and modern, distinctly Chinese, and yet evidently avant-garde, would create an uproar in China, and a few years later, would conquer the world. Now, one of this group, as I said, soon to be called the New Chinese Composers, was Qu Xiaosong. Qu Xiaosong has become known among scholars of Chinese music and also among musicians, both for the exuberance and the absolute silence of his compositions. He is a master of, let's say, unheard and unhearable sounds, and his music, which is indebted to some extent to the spirit of China's countryside, captures the depth of Chinese philosophical and religious thought. He was born on September 6, 1952, in Guiyang, which is the capital of the southern province Guizhou in China. And Qu Xiaosong is thus, as I just said before, a member of this generation that we usually, sinologists among us, usually call the lost generation. Lost because during the Cultural Revolution, they were sent to the countryside, were sent down to the countryside, as they say, even though you were sent up the mountains, really, to learn from and work with the peasants, to be re-educated. This is supposed to be the lost generation, but not unlike many of his classmates, Qu Xiaosong does not feel, I think, that this time of his life was lost completely. He said once that this experience about the Miao, among the Miao minority, where he was sent down to, and the subsequent years that he spent as a string player in a Beijing opera troupe in Guiyang, performing revolutionary music for the masses, were the very stuff that his musical career was made of. And indeed, a composer from a generation of much older age, a generation of his teachers, Wu Zhenqiang, he once said if Qu Xiaosong had not been sent to the countryside, then he would not write the kind of music that he does write. And now I begin with my first question to Qu Xiaosong. Do you really think this is true? Is the Cultural Revolution, is this experience in the countryside something that made your music different from what it would have been before?
Yes, it's true, actually. Because I was born in this small city surrounded by mountains like this. I just love mountains. When I see the mountains, I just want to go to the top. Not for concrete. To be with it. Because of Cultural Revolution, because this movement, because of the way education source from Mao Zedong, I had a chance to really see and work in the mountains, in the really remote mountain areas. When I come to the mountain area, when I come to the countryside, to European people, to Western people, to so-called developed world, civilized world, I always feel I just feel we have different picture what a countryside is. For instance, I have been in the United States for 10 years. As I know that in countryside, the only difference between countryside and the city is because people live in the countryside. They have a highway, they have a car, they have a television, to see everything happen in the civilized society. They have a telephone, very easy communication, and then they're working by machine. But in remote mountain area in China and the many places in Asia, people still live in a kind of formal age, primitive life. For instance, there's one village which I really visited when I was in China. The people even just, the main place in country, the low mountain area in China, no electricity, no telephone, no TV. So in a world of primitive, we think it's a better word, if you just to describe this kind of situation, the life is very difficult, very hard. But in the other hand, other side, you think the people in relation to the earth, to the mountains, is really close. They're really needy for that. So when I had 4 years to be a real farmer, so I would have to do all kinds of work which farmers do. So it's really given me a very, very, very special experience. And also because people, that kind of people are very different from city people. If you deal with city people, especially big city people, you don't know what he means when you talk, you know, most of the time. Yeah. But if you deal with people in this kind of remote mountain area, you know exactly. If he is not a deep smell to you, that's a real smell. If he hates you, you'll feel. It's really very straightforward in the direction, which is a very suits my personality. Also, because I was born in a small city near mountains, so I went to mountain very often. So I just myself, I feel a kind of a connection with mountains. I find out later, my health is not good. If I'm unhappy, whatever you buy, don't want them. No. Everything is here. I feel good. I feel healthy, I feel happy. So, yeah, definitely, this life experience is really, really have very strong influence in my music later on. So then, I feel living among them with people there, and so that's why when Barbara said conquer the world, so I don't feel comfortable with the conquer, the world of conquer. For instance, in Chinese ancient culture, there are many of ancient countries, for instance in China, Taoism, even Buddhism, always looking for harmonious relationship between people. We never say conquer the world, conquer the people. So that's why, for instance, I said I want to go to the top of a mountain, just want to feel my mountain. I feel with it. I feel with it. I look at the sky, I feel with I'm within it. It's just one part of them.
So maybe, just to make it a little more concrete for you, how this type of thinking and philosophy influences Joseph's music. Do something like a shangge, which is also is a very obvious element in Mongdong, one of his pieces that he composed in 1986, I think, right? The kind of music that you would also be exposed to, which is a music that is very close to the earth, and music that is very close to nature, that also becomes part of your own music. Maybe, do you want to do an illustration about the sounds?
In another 4 years when I walked and lived in the mountain area, I didn't notice music. It's just very naturally a part of their life, the people in mountains. When they're happy, they sing a happy song. When they just destroy and they sing a really sad song. When they have a wedding, when they have family, or when they build a house, they always sing. But it's just everything just in life. Now when I went to the conservatory, because of all the conservatory in China, the education system is very westernized. And we studied harmony, we studied form of counterpoint, everything from west. Of course, the second hand is the Russian influence. Western system. In the first 1 year, 2 years, I wrote the pieces but I really didn't feel satisfied. I didn't feel that's me. I didn't feel that's the message I wanted to write. And there's a very interesting program the Chinese Conservatory of Music Center to request the student, competition students, go to concert to collect folk music. This is a very, very interesting program because this program not only asks you to collect music, many musicologists did before, but to be experienced different kind of people in different areas. What's, and also the expression of their music is quite different. Now I remember once we went to another mountain area. In the evening, we found two singers, folk singers. One lady, a very young lady, a young man. In the beginning, the human does like a whispering. Very soft voice. Suddenly, the very strong voice come from the girl's body. I just felt, I was I just felt, I was really, I don't know what the word can describe that thing. Why? Well, now I'm recalling my memory, I still feel what I felt in that moment. I just feel the soul of mountain just burst out from the body of the still to come out. In that moment, I said, that should be my music. So what's that? It's difficult to describe what this kind of music is. It's just like you just feel people just part of the mountain, of the nature. It's not a separate sense. And understand also the expression is very rough and straightforward, just getting you. It's unlike what I think European mature composer is very polished. That's very good. I'm not against that. But this kind of music is more close to my being and it just wake me up from my memory of mountains. And wake me up from the study of Western music. That's the kind of. And also, when they sing on mountains, for instance, that's a bigger mountain, maybe another mountain. So if I want to contact some people over there, they by singing. Yeah. Of course, you need very strong voice, very loud voice. Yeah. Something like that. For instance, if the monk in the far away, you have a reason for that, yeah. Like you hear echo. That's my speed. So even now, if I go to mountain, and if I notice some, like I make echoes, I'm always shouting. I feel good.
So yesterday you went up at the seat, and if you were there, you heard this too. In Guangdong, that's one of the early compositions of 1986, this kind of mountain song spirit is there all the time. You have this voice coming in and out of a very interesting orchestral setting, time and again, with these kind of shangge mountain song sounds. Can you tell us, I mean, you went back to the countryside time and again. Can you tell us just a little bit about your experience of going to Sichuan and Tibet, maybe, and what was special about going there?
Yeah, going back to Sichuan, just like what I said, the experience of the collector of folk music, happened again. There was in Yunnan province. Mm-hmm. I went to a very private minority group. I remember one evening, we drink a lot of coffee with some old people, old ladies, old men, sit on the gong, the fire. And after drinking that, they sing a very old song. And everybody singing unique, only one very, very very simple melody. I just feel that it kind of feels very rude. Everybody is very, very rude. But on the other hand, everybody feels the wounds of the loneliness. Why is that? Just like that, before you, I see this melody, all the pieces, all the uses. Oh, I'm not the only one to know this. Everybody has kind of seen me. Then, because they are very old, not only their age, their people, also is very, very old. I love history, the human mountains. Now I feel time has passed by. The life going on. But there's something in depth always there. It's like it's life just like the ballast boat floating in the endless sea of time. Just like that kind of thing. But it's very, very it's a different feeling from what I shout. Oh, the moon, very long voice. That's how I become very silent. And it brings very, very deep feeling from you. Very original. Original feeling from you. Why I said original? Then you know that I have an experience to rehearse with European singers and musicians. For instance, my opera, Death of Oedipus, there's one thing I want to show people are really angry. But it's really to get the Western singer to be angry, to show the angry voice. For instance, if I said, get out! It's really, when people really want to yell somebody to get out, people say, get out! And the singers, they train a very good voice. They always think, get out, man! You don't feel real original feeling of anger. Anger. Yeah. That's what I say original feeling. And how you feel from this kind of focus on very street. And
one other very original feeling, if I took it right, is that there is not very much music at all. There is actually silence. No music. And I think that's also one thing you experienced maybe in Tibet, maybe. Can you tell us a little bit about, because we've now heard the exuberant part of Tisha Song, let's now turn to the more silent part of Tisha Song. Can you tell a little bit more about where did this idea of silence come from in your music, and how does it work?
Yes, I remember in more than 10 years ago, I was in Tibet. That's the most special place I have been, and the most spiritual place I have been. I just remember that because I went to a northern part of Tibet, which there's the vast of area, there was no people. And only white yak, and the white horses. And because it's very high land, the air is really fresh. You can see very far distance. You see small mountains. Actually, they are big mountains. But the distance is so far. And the sky is so blue. And the lake is even bluer than the sky. Then, someone mentioned, because Tibet, as most people know, Lhasa and the other cities have big temples. You hear very strong religious music, and you see the many monks. But in the most Tibet, religion is just a part of life. You don't feel that. You don't feel religion. But to be there, you are in a very high, 5,000 meters up the sea level. But with very vast land, if you see that mountain, here maybe just we 10 minutes walk away. Bottom of the mountain. But in Tibet, it might cost a half day. You feel that distance like this. Because the distance is so far, you don't hear anything. center. And then sometimes you feel the one causes of that. Then when you draw a car on a track, then you see suddenly snow comes out, the sky's dark. And sometimes you see light through the dark clouds on the ground. Then you see some sheep, only one girl, take care of sheep. And you really suddenly understand why people have that strong faith in religion. And religion is just working with the nature itself. It's a little too close to the Western, we call God. Yeah, maybe in the Buddhist, we call Buddha, whatever. It's just a few kind, not the spirit, as you with you. Yeah. And you don't, because for you can imagine this girl to take care of sheep. One day nobody can talk with. They live with themselves. That's really, really, really very special. Special feeling. Yeah. And now, when I come back to that, I just didn't want to compose anymore. It's very, very strong thing. And, but still, I'm a kind of person which is very slow reacting. Mm-hmm. To really feel silence in the music, in my music, which is maybe 4 years late. When I went to United States, there's a place called near Philadelphia called Yellow Spring. It's an organization for modern music, theater, and dance. So I was invited there. I spent a few days in the recording studio to do some experimental things. I used one of my old pieces. That old piece, which in the beginning, the 5 minutes, only one note. In the beginning, it's just one bar of a single note, fading and fading out, the one bar rest, and that kind of thing. So I put this in the half speed. Now one fourth speed, when the tempo goes slower and the pitch goes lower. But when the one fourth speed, I still can recognize this, my music, because I know every detail of the record. But when I put in the one eighth speed, it's very, very significant happened in my whole life. Because then the pitch, you don't hear the pitch because it's very low. This kind of noise. And also because usually when I really want to listen to sound, listen to music, I usually close the window and I don't want to say anything, that's one. Hear the sound in the space. And with this very long sound appears, just like kind of what white noise, I cannot name it. Then the one bar rest becomes very, very long. So for that time, that moment, to me, that the one bar rest is like a medium piece. Now I was a doubt about the machine to be purple. I was waiting for the second sound to come. Here it comes. Now I doubted, perhaps the machine has a problem. Then it comes. In that moment, never happened before. I just felt that I was falling down to the ocean at the time. No end, no beginning, no end. And that two very low, nameless noise to existence, meaning of the existence of this two sound, just to remain, to suggest that the eternal silence. Then, yeah, after that, I think about music, Western music. Now what a musician's timing in music, total timing in music, for instance, Beethoven Symphony number 5, bong 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 bong, bong bong bong, that's his time. And if we ask ourselves as ordinary people, we feel minutes, second minutes, 10 minutes, or 1 day, 1 month, 1 year. Can we feel what happens? Maybe some people can feel. Can we feel 1 million years? I can. Maybe some of you. I can. But 1 million years to the edge of Earth, of universe, and nothing. Then I find out the man's sense, the measure of time is really tiny and meaningful. Then I recall something which that the great Taoist Lao Tzu said more than 2,000 years ago. Once he said, the great sound, sound is silence. The greatest image. I just feel kind of simply cross 2,000 years, which we reached same or same feeling. So this makes me feel I don't want to reach too many notes or too many dramatic materials or details in the music. That's what I wanted, that kind of music which only with very few notes and sounds. That's the beginning of my G series.
Mm-hmm. And the T series is really a series of pieces that explore different types of silences rather than sounds. You will have sounds in those pieces, yes, but there's a really balance between sounds rather than for the sounds between the silences. So Western concept of composition in verse to an extent. This way I think you can see how many of these ideas that originally were perhaps drawn from an experience of the Chinese countryside can then also have deep philosophical, Chinese philosophical roots. Because this idea of silence being the greatest of all sounds is an idea that is present in Taoism, it's also present in Confucianism actually, and if you remember some Chinese paintings of Chinese literati with a wonderful instrument that they always have it as seven-string zither, if you look closely, this zither will sometimes not have any strings at all, because the greatest zither is a zither that cannot produce sound, a zither that has no strings. So silence in many of the Chinese philosophies actually plays a very important role. Silence is the greatest of all musics. Silence is also something that becomes rather important in the opera that will be performed tonight at the Edinburgh Festival, Life on a String. And I think for the next half hour or so, we'll talk about Life on a String a little bit more. So for those of you who will go to the performance, you'll know a little bit more about what Xu Xiaohu's ideas were about this opera. So maybe just very briefly, the story is such that there's this blind storyteller who has been told by his own teacher that he's blind, yes, but one day when his 1,000th string has broken, he has to play all the time when he's telling his stories, but when the 1,000th string will have broken, then he will be able to look into his instrument, into his three-string flute, and he will find a piece of paper, and on the piece of paper will be a prescription that will make him healthy again, that will make him see again. And it so happens that while he is telling a story, the 1,000th string breaks. And he's very happy. He looks into his lute, or makes someone take out the paper from the lute, and it turns out the prescription is no prescription. The paper is empty. Now, what does this mean? How did you find the story? Why did you stop the story at this very minute? Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, because we just talked about it, spoken about silence. But in the opera, it's a different story, different opinion. When I come to the opera, when I compose opera, I have a kind of feeling I'm not a pure composer. Unfortunately, I'm not a pure composer. I feel I'm some sing between composer and playwright. Then, usually I choose the story from opera, is like the story compels, can tell more than story itself. I wish I can find the good stories can bring some kind of message. For this story, to me also it's a question. It's a question mark. I feel this story is about something about meaning of life, or meaning of death, the meaning of hope. The end of this story actually to me is open question, this question mark. If this happened to me, a single wish for whole life, in the end there's nothing, it's empty. What am I going to deal with this situation? Can I go down? Can I still be as a happy person? It's easy to talk. It's really difficult to deal with. And further on, the other question to me is that, do I really need that prescription to support my whole life? Can I really to be able to live in this moment? Not thinking about the past, then the moment comes up. So it's just a question to me. So it's attractive to me. So that's what, this is one, it's the basic reason I want to choose this for my whole life. Because, once I read in my artistic proposal before it is done, I said the storyteller tells the story. The story tells the truth. What I told is just about my thinking, the question to me. But the question to everybody who is interested in thinking about that. So actually the end is of a there's no answer, just question. To me, it's this question, yeah, many questions. So other questions, and I hope the story which I choose can bring questions. Sometimes the message only is a question, not an answer. Yeah, because also I can tell in the one of many then stories, the ones a young monk went to visit. As a master asking him, what is that? The master just refused to tell him. And he followed the master years by years. And it's just nothing. In the end, he was really, really very mad about the master. So I forced years and he still don't tell me. The master said, actually, I can tell you. But what I can tell you is my son is wrong. Then this student was very angry. He beat the master, just left the master. He went to another temple, never thinking about land, just cooking and making food for the sort of people. One day when you're walking on the field, the one piece of stone jump on the feet, the bamboo, boom, come. Then he feels thanks to his master. But what he understand, I mean, just the story I want to read. Story to tell the truth. But what is the truth? I don't know.
See, the original story that Qu Xianzong based his opera on is written by Shi Tiezhen and actually ends differently from how he ends his opera. He ends his opera kind of midway in the story by Shi Tiezhen. Shi Tiezhen continues and lets the blind storyteller find out that actually he made a mistake, and the master actually said it's 1,200 strings that have to break, and so on and so forth. So,
and in the original novel, because after the point, actually, in the original novel, he had a lot of younger students to follow him. And he went back to tell the student, said, oh, I remember wrong. It should have been 1,200. The story going on. To generation and generation. So I don't want that, I just want that. And then, open for question.
And I mean, it is open for question because I first actually misunderstood what the storyteller says, the last words he says Are the words that the storyteller always says every evening when he tells people to come again tomorrow to listen to the next part of the story. They always end at the most interesting part of their own story, and then, I mean, you know this, come again tomorrow to hear what's really interesting. And he does that after having found out that the sheet of paper, the prescription, is an empty, blank paper. He is silent for a moment, and then just says to the audience, come again tomorrow, and I will tell stories again. I thought, first, this means he has understood the essence of Zen, which is almost just telling us a story about Zen, has understood that life is such that it can be, I mean, the whole sense of life can be a blank sheet of paper. And I can be happy about that. I can continue life. I can just go on and say, okay, just come back again tomorrow and life will go on. But Chi Xiaosong just told me before when we were talking about the opera again, no, this is not what I mean. I want this as an open question. I actually want the performer not to be very calm, not to say this, you know, come back again tomorrow in a very calm voice, but to say it kind of emotionally, right?
It's just spontaneous, because he has to do it, just like an everyday's life. He's telling story, then in a certain point, then he stopped, and he said, I want him to come again, so he's come again tomorrow. Just spontaneously, that. So I want to end like that. Actually, I don't know what he's been. Yeah. So can he go beyond? Or maybe he killed himself after the evening? I don't know. I don't want to make it very tricky. He's passed by, he's that master. No, I don't know. Perhaps he be that master. But maybe he suicide himself afterwards. I just don't know. Mm-hmm.
And this is, maybe we can now talk about the differences between this opera and some of the operas that you've written before. So this is his third opera, and the two before were Oedipus and Death of Oedipus. And actually in Death of Oedipus, Chichisong describes Oedipus as someone who attains enlightenment, someone who attains Zen. Someone who goes beyond his own suffering, understands that suffering is something that one can bear, one can go beyond, and one can just buy beyond. Now, Life on a String is different. One thing that's very different is that Life on a String is not sung in English. The two other operas are sung in English. Life on a String is sung in Chinese. Why did you choose to have Chinese as a language for Life on a String?
The simple answer is because I'm Chinese. And I want to say, yeah, so you can tell my English is terrible. I'm Chinese. I feel more easy to use Chinese. And also, Chinese is kind of language which every word with single syllable. So for music, not only because Chinese, each of words have different tones. It when the same pronunciation in a different tones, then has different meanings. Especially when he, since he is a single syllable language, it's more convenient to bring the music feeling. Also because the language itself is very musical as well. And also, maybe we can talk a little bit about the difference between my understanding, the difference between Western opera tradition and the Chinese opera tradition. So you know Western opera very well. For instance, a training for a singer, we call singer in operas. We do call actors, actress in the opera. Right? That means the most important thing for singer is sing, to sing good. They sing beautifully. That's all, almost all. For instance, if you go to most of the classical opera productions, you hear very beautiful voice. And you don't see the very good acting as a character. And everything is singing. So you don't hear the original expression of language in everything deals with. But in Chinese opera tradition, for instance, picking one up, we call actors, actresses. They have to learn how to sing, no doubt. Of course, the different vocalization. Some Western people dislike it, so just like the cast coming. But it's another style and other way to sing. It's not enough. But you have to know to learn how to behave on the stage. Then you have to know how to speak. For instance, I can give you an example. If I want to say, I want to pass across a street. If in life language, in Chinese, I say, 我要过街区, you feel the tone different, but it's still very flat. For a picking up person, or actor, he might say, 我要过街区. It's really music. If you hear the beginning of music, just the graduation of the language, you feel the tone will change, the expression change, the rhythm changes. Then, when this kind of phrase, maybe in Western opera, kind of, but it's still the speaking, not the singing. Now, when this kind of sort of pass by then to the singing part, you feel really a smooth process. And also, because everybody has to know how to behave. For instance, in Chinese opera, there's one kind of thing, the men play female notes. Yeah. Now you have to behave like a woman. Really, really, some very great actors, for instance, Mei Lan Huang. Even better now, really, really delicate, really kind of smooth, very, oh, you cannot tell by language. Yeah. That's really wonderful. That to me, if you compare with it, the traditions, then I feel that the Chinese opera tradition is more complete, theaterful, rather than the Western opera. But in Western opera, composers control the time, everything, the present. But in picking opera, it's not. So if a director is not good, then maybe time is very boring, perhaps. If an actor is not good, then it's quite a bit boring. So what I want to do is this, my dream of opera form is really, really mix two traditions together in high quality, not only in flavor. I feel many people do deal with flavor. I don't want to deal with flavor. I want to deal with quality. Now this kind of opera really requires a kind of special singer who can sing, who can read the patient, and also who can react as a new character. In other sense, the different way of speech, of speak in Chinese opera is really good. I want to give an example in Life on the Show. When the beginning, the musician is play gongs in the countryside, a theater group or gathering more people and play gongs. Hey, come out, come, we're coming into your village to play, and people come. So this is kind of the beginning of my opera. The musician play Chinese gongs and cymbals. Yeah, Western they're doing a very good job. Then later on he said, oh, silent, Lao Han, the central person, I mean the storyteller. All the people, all the guys. So I said, Lao Han is coming. Then later on, this singer has a monologue. Actually, what he's saying is something we should be thinking about that. Because in this particular unit, he has a feeling with his closing hand. Because before this evening, he has spoken 997 strings in three strings back. He has kind of feeling he's approaching. That moment, he has been dreaming for 50 years. So he says something like, because people call him Lao Han, by South by